¿Qué onda, primos?
Primas.
Y primes.
Welcome to my...
My primos.
My...
Primo.
Podcast.
My name is Freddy.
My name is Kevin Garcia.
My name is Elia Maria Madrid.
Well, this is Chukuma, whenever I can make it.
My Primos Podcast discusses all things fandom and pop culture.
From comic books...
Movies...
to whatever obsession we have this week.
But with a Latine...
Latine...
My Latine...
perspective. Remember, we're all primos.
We're all primes.
We're all primos.
No matter what part of the world we're from. ¿Qué onda, primos y primas and primes? And welcome back to My Primos Podcast. My name is Freddy, and with me tonight is my prima and yours, Ms. Elia Maria Spice Illustrations. Say what's up, Elia.
What's up, Kevin?
Oh, well, wait.
Change
you fumbled
up.
There. But Elia, you've been gone. That's why.
I have.
It's out of practice.
I know. I forgot my own name. It's been so long.
Look at that. It has been so long. I've missed you. I've missed you. You've been missed. Primos
miss
have missed
y'all.
You. About you a lot. So we also have a special guest tonight coming back. I think you have now topped the most episodes. You've helped host. You've been a guest numerous times. We're speaking, of course, the fantastical, magical, flipante Oscar of Five Meats Comics, Oscar Garza. Say what's up, Oscar.
What's up, Kevin?
Oh, there it is. What's up, Kevin? It's going to be a shirt and a hat.
What's up, Kevin? Just what's up, Kevin?
Man, but you know what? After all the fucking love that Veronique gave Kevin last episode.
I know.
Like, he's like, everybody needs a Kevin in their lives. You know?
Do you have a Kevin in your life?
Do you have a Kevin in your life, Oscar? Or is that
Kevin? I do. The Kevin in my life just happens to be Kevin.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Look at that. Well, primos, tonight we're going to have a blast. We're going to catch up with Oscar and Elia, of course, talk about some cool new work that Oscar's involved in, and geek out about the stuff that we love to geek out about. But remember, guys, follow us at My Primos Podcast on all social media, video platforms now, audio platforms. I don't know if we get the smell-o-vision eventually, because
one day,
I smell amazing today. But of course, guys, follow us, let us know what you think, and check out myprimospodcast.com. And I guess thumbs up, round of applause for Kevin's campaign. His campaign for the Kickstarter for World War Comics went through.
We did it,
congrats
gamers.
To Kevin and everybody that apoyó and jumped on board. So really happy for that. So keep an eye on that. But let's catch up a little bit. It's been a while since we've all been in the same virtual space, if you will.
Yeah.
Oscar, what have you been up to, man, since last we saw you?
Well, Elia Maria, I've never been in a virtual space with you before, I don't think. I've been in person, even around you in person, but...
Yeah!
Yeah. Never in the interwebs. What's new with me? Let's see. Dang. Well, Through Fences dropped, which is a book we've been working on for years, with Frederick Adama, and then what else? I'm back into wrestling. Puggy and Chubby Uncle Juan just had a wrestling match last week at Fight Opera here in Austin, Texas. And then we are going to do another show, Party World Wrestling, in March, which I'm very excited about, at the end of March. And
cool, man.
Yeah, that's what's up with me.
That's awesome.
Oscar, it's always fun. You're always doing things. Let's talk about Miss Elia Maria. She's been out for a bit, but, you know, I like to mess with Elia. When Elia has free time, she doesn't use it. She doesn't use it at all. She's always working. She's checking in on people, asking about the pod. But yet, she won't watch things or listen to things or play things. She'll just
I'm getting better.
Work.
I'm getting better.
Did you get to do anything not creative working or like something you can just lay out and enjoy, like consume something during your break?
I watched all of the live action Avatar.
Hey, that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
Yeah. I actually liked it. I actually really liked it. I saw it get so much hate online, and I thought I was going in for the M. Night Shyamalan, like, worse version. And no.
Mm.
Like, I thought it was fairly well done. Like, yeah, I'll critique some of the acting in it, but overall, I thought it was really beautiful and well done. I'm ready for the second season.
Oscar, did you watch it? Or are you a fan of Avatar at all?
I did not, and I probably won't watch it. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. I just feel like I already saw it. Like I saw all of Avatar. I saw the cartoon.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I kind of feel like it's a thing everybody wanted, but doesn't need to exist. So like, I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad skipping it just because like, I already saw it. And I'm good.
I, for one, enjoyed the shit out of it. But my wife had never seen the cartoon, right? And it's crazy how we call anime, Japanese anime, but this Western-ish anime vibes, cartoon, right? Whatever. But loved the original series, was a fan of it through and through. And when we watched the show, I really liked it. Yeah, some of the, like I said, acting was a little Katara, down over the top. But besides that, everything else was pretty solid. I dug it. There were some pretty cool, heartfelt episodes that I didn't think they were going to touch on. They actually brought on. Not to kill it for anybody if they haven't enjoyed a show that's like 20 years old now. But you're right. I think there is something where I enjoyed what I experienced when the original run came through. And when we have the live action of it, I got a lot of that, oh shit, like a little bit of Uncanny Valley. With some of the characters, some of the setups, and it made me feel good. I was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool that we pulled it off." But could you skip it altogether and just enjoy the animated one? Of course, 100%. So, take it for what it's worth. We talked about this before. We want to keep things in their own, you know, on it. Don't just bag on it because it's not like the anime or not like the cartoon or not like the comic book. Like on its own, solid. But hey, good all around.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm kind of against the notion that a live action has to be the be all end all of your story.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not a fan of that kind of notion. Especially being a comic book creator, people are always like, "Do you want your thing to be like a animated series or a movie?" Only because I want to get paid for that.
Yo.
I'm just keeping it real. Like I like my comic. For real. My comic is great, but I won't feel bad if it never becomes a movie or a TV show. I would love it because then I can like pay off my house. That'd be rad.
But yeah.
Other than that,
live off that.
Yeah. Other than that, I can care less.
I mean, touching on that subject, right? Because we're here, but I enjoy, and this is the thing, like we've talked about it. Let's leave it on its own. Yeah. There are certain stories and books where you hear, hey, they're making it into a movie. Please don't fuck it up. Right, yeah. That's kind of like your thing.
That's usually the way the thing, right?
Yeah, like don't fuck it up. But
yeah,
I think, and I don't know if you're with me, guys, other primos out there. I get that feeling because I know, especially on something that I've enjoyed, like I'm a fan of it. I'm like, I want someone that's never read it to experience what I experienced. You know, maybe not to my degree, but like if you've never, like say Avatar, for example, right? If you've never consumed it and this is your first experience with it, if they fuck it up, it breaks your heart because they're gonna go back when you comes up in conversation, you're like, hey, what do you mean you didn't see this character, you didn't do that, you didn't watch this, like you didn't get the same experience. It doesn't do justice not only for your experience but for the people creating the show.
I agree with that, and I guess that's one of the reasons why something like a live action Avatar might be a pro for it to exist, being someone who never watched the show or somebody who doesn't even like animation could possibly get into it. And that's, and then you know, you can, you know, leave the gate open. You don't have to gatekeep on there. We're like, if you like Avatar, it doesn't matter if it's a cartoon or movie, if they were, you know, if they like it, because it's I think it's essentially the same story they're telling, right? So I guess a good example of that is I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, unless I'm in the room with somebody who's read the books, because I've never read the damn books. But I love those movies, you know?
Same.
And so, you know, I'm reading The Hobbit to one of my kids at night. So I'm starting the Tolkien books now. Just starting to read them, and it's fun to do. But like, if I've never read the books, I still wouldn't care. I love Lord of the Rings. I can still say I love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, No, I went to go see the Hobbit movies with someone who was very dedicated to the book. They walked out of the theater hating it, and I was like, that was the best movie ever. I was like, that was fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to maybe it's for the best if you watch a condensed version of something first.
Yeah.
Before you get into the big nerdy meat and potato thing. I don't know. Maybe that's better. I don't know.
I mean, I agree because, for example, I know who Tolkien was because of school, but when the movies came out, that's when that got thrust into the mainstream, right? And everybody had to go read The Hobbit, read The Lord of the Rings, and like really go after it and see the ins and outs. And everybody wanted to be the expert, you know, like and know it off the top of your head and the trivia and all this stuff, right? And I'm from a far gone age where you had to go memorize stuff instead of Googling it, right? Like my kid's 14, and I fuck with them because I'm like, we'll have a conversation and they'll be like, well, what about this? And he's like, I don't know. Oh, if only I had a supercomputer in my pocket that just that can type in. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, damn, I had to fucking walk to the library on a hot ass day and go look for the book and ask. I look at the card catalog and like ask the librarian, like, what do you think? And then the like, internet and try to like, print up pictures of Salma Hayek or whatever. I don't know. Whatever. I digress.
or growing up in the 80s, you ask a question and your older brother tells you wrong information and that becomes fact in your head for like 30 years. Yeah.
My uncle works for Nintendo. He told me, okay?
Yeah.
Like, that was shit.
Yeah.
That's always a thing, you know? It's a blast. But let me just kind of move on, guys, because I do want to talk about Oscar's work and Through Fences. So, Oscar, I got a sneak peek of it. I really enjoyed it. I want to give you, like, my thoughts on it. But first, give us the pitch so everybody that doesn't know what Through Fences is and what it's about and kind of why they need to go get it.
Yeah, Through Fences. It's about 80-ish pages, like $17.99. Go get it.
Yeah! Hell yeah. There it is.
Done. Great right marketing. Here, marketing Oscar.
So it's an anthology series done. It's like eight different stories told through different people's eyes, loosely based on real occurrences that happened in the news throughout, the past 10-ish years with the more dicey, hairy, the past administration we've been living through, and plus like the immigration policies where things get, people get scapegoated and seen as enemies and just used for talking points and boogeymen are like, they're just real ass people who are living their lives and trying to better their lives. And they get caught up in politics and it's really scummy and cruddy, but it's real life and it happened. And the thing about this, it's an anthology. It's a collection of short stories. It's all written by one person, Professor Frederick Luis Aldama, formerly of the University of Ohio, I think.
Ohio? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's in Austin.
Now in Austin, UT. And it's all illustrated by me. And so, in order to have the anthology be different, each story is told by a different point of view. And for the art, I use different art styles for each story to try to break it up a bit. And it's not... it's not a fun read. It's a hard, it's a tough read, I think, because it's real life stuff. Things, nobody has a happy ending in this book, And it wouldn't be the book that it is if it did, it's just the unfortunate things that people are going through now. Some people don't even make it out of their story alive. It's tough. It's a tough read, but it's important. And whether you lean, whether you ball swing to the left or to the right, or if you're a centrist, even y'all centrist folks, you do have to do a vote. So, it's an, I feel like it's an important read to put yourself in other people's shoes, many people's shoes, and, you know, live a little bit of their lives and not the fun part. Yeah.
Elia, you have some thoughts. Mm-hmm. Start with you. What do you think about the book in general and just kind of thoughts about it? And we have, I have thoughts. So definitely, please.
I have many thoughts. No, I really enjoyed it. I feel like I don't want to sound like I'm pushing on education, like what should be, but honestly, I feel like this is a good read for like high schoolers to read and understand that this is actually happening, because all these stories were so realistic, so well pathed out. And you mentioned the different art styles. That was something that I like noticed immediately as soon as I got at least to the third story. And I was like, wait, was this all Oscar? I like scrolled up just to make sure, because I was like, oh my God. I loved all the different styles used for each story. And there was one that was like in all black and white. And I thought it was such a good choice to tell that story as such. I don't know how to describe, but like each character, you open the chapter, you met someone else in a new style, and it set the tone. The colors even like changed with the moods. The one that I actually had to put the book down at one point because I was crying. It was the chapter of the queer couple. That's all I'll say. I'm not gonna say how it ends.
That's definitely the one of the high points as far as like emotion in the book.
And the work on it was beautiful, and the chapter card that it ended on ripped my heart out. It ripped my heart out. And I had to put it down because I was crying. I'm like, this happens.
Yeah.
And not to say like it was glamorized, but it was drawn in a way that made the story bearable more than like, you know, the matter.
Cause yeah.
You know, you still got to take easy, but it's still got to take it.
Yeah.
And that was by design. The art styles were definitely by design. Like the first, if you look in the first two to get into the, how the sausage is made or whatever, like the first two stories. So this book is not my style at all. Like, this is a very serious book about politics and about immigration. And I do, you know, dick and fart jokes. You know, I do.
Comedy. You're amazing.
Yeah, I do.
By the way,
I do lowbrow, silly comedy. But because of my background growing up on the border, Aldama felt that I was a really good fit, and I'm an easy dude to work with, so that made it even easier. So the first two stories was actually me trying way too hard, because the first two stories are done like in like a very realistic style.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, especially with the first one, because that one has to do with children, kids in cages and whatnot. And for reference, I use my own kids. Like, hey, stand in the corner and put your hand out like this, and then I take a picture. And that actually like hurt me emotionally, because the point of this book is to put yourself in the shoes of these people. Mm-hmm. And not only did I do that, but I put my kids in the shoes of these people, and it hurt me. And it hurt me to watch, like to draw. And so that one really messed me up. And like, I took a break for like months. No, I'm sorry. Years. I took like 2 years off of this book. Not just because of that. I was going through a lot of stuff at home.
Yeah.
You know, COVID, lockdown, divorce, a lot of crazy stuff. You know, Endgame really hurt me hard, bro. You know,
I was actually gonna ask you about that, because like the sub.
Oh yeah, matter, we still gotta talk about anger.
Because like I love
Kevin
work.
Garcia's gonna show up right now.
Oh yeah, Kevin just pops in.
He's gonna just jump out of nowhere. Seriously,
no, because like this. I'm such a big fan of your work with three meats. Oh my God, with five meats.
Oh no. Remember, there's five of them.
They're set, the cinco. But that's why I was like, this was Oscar? Like, I'm scrolling up, and then I'm like, if I had to draw something of it, just one of these, it would be hard. How did you like manage to just handle being able to illustrate multiple of these stories, having such a comedic like art background?
I kind of had to get over myself. Like the first two was actually me being very, I was not confident when I did the first two because I drew the book in order. Really? I drew it in order as you see it in the book. And so the first two are like super realistic style. It's totally not my bag. And it took a lot out of me because I felt like the content deserved more than what I do. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I should draw not like myself. I should like, but then it ended up being like super depressing for me drawing it. And then it also like, it started maybe skirting the line of like, if I do the whole book like this, I mean, people might have well, you might have well just done a Fumetti and like taking pictures or done like a textbook, you know, like it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It probably would have been better just to release it as a book, you know, with like no pictures if you, because it would have just been so like uber depressing, like who's going to read this, you know?
Yeah.
So after the first two, and going through, you know, not totally related, but like I started going into therapy, dealing with my separation and divorce, and I started like feeling better about myself, and you know, Stella getting his groove back and whatnot, and then I started getting back in the book because like I told Aldama like three times, like, hey man, you should probably get another artist on this book because I don't know if I can get back into it. And to his credit, like he denied me at every point. He's like, no,
I believe in you.
Yeah, you can do it. You do. He's like, and he said, take all the time that you want. Like, we started this book, I don't know, man, like maybe 2019 or something.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe 2018. Yeah. So once I got back into the book, the first two were drawn. The first two stories, Dora and Rocky. Mm-hmm. After that, I said, like, man, if I'm going to do this, just do it. You know, I don't have to, like, don't think about the technical side. Just think about the feelings. Just think about the feelings. And then, so the feelings helped me with what I'm going to draw. But as far as how I was going to draw, I was just going to do it. So, like, each one just happened in its own style based on what the story is. But as far as the style itself, they're all the other ones are a little closer to my style, but just a little differences. I got to like, for lack of a better term, I got to play with the styles, you know, like one of them is, I should get the name.
Right. I saw your art got very familiar for me. Like starting with Alberto's story,
yeah,
which is regarding someone working for the Border Patrol for ICE, and yeah,
like that one's very similar to just my style. And El Celso, that one was like,
yeah,
I went for like it is my style, but I went for more of a gritty kind of feel.
Yes, yeah, that's when I recognized your style was that one.
Yeah, and sure. I played with the shading to give it a scratchier style. Like, if anything, artistically, a lot of these stories are tests for me on, like, what Mashbone and Grifty could look like in the future. You know, if I wanted to branch out. Yeah. And go in full color, because I don't really do that a lot. But, yeah, each one had its own little different style. Like, there's one that had to do with crossing the river and crossing just literally the part about crossing the river and how you over in California, they have those signs with the little family running, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did that whole story through those signs. And that was me patting myself on the back. Like oh,
I'm telling so there.
Hey, man.
You know what? But like, I dig it, man. Like for me reading these stories, like you said, like I was expecting to get like a happy turnaround.
Yeah,
I was expecting to get like, she's gonna get out, or you know what, like the dad's gonna come around, you know, like all this stuff. But then you realize like some people this don't get life. Happy endings. Yeah, man. This is real life. Yeah.
They don't,
you know, and
get to have happy endings. I mean, I was watching, I don't know, this was like maybe 10 years ago. There was this documentary on Netflix where these documentary film crew followed these three people as they crossed the border. As they, you know, they got to go through the desert over in like Arizona or somewhere around there. And they were following them, and it just shows everything they went through. And it was super, it was rough. I mean, you know, the people on those like Naked and Afraid reality shows do it for fun, you know, but these people,
yeah, it's a trip because you got to see, like you said earlier, Leah, right? Like, you didn't expect it with the art style, and not to, like I said, Oscar's kind of flexing a little bit. He gets to flex a little bit on his ability, because we've seen one style, right? But we get to see a little more. You just see where each person's story is different, but yet there's a thread, right? And in a way, you know, like Oscar's that thread. He's the artist, but these people in these stories, there's a thread. You know, they're all Latinos. They're all trying, not only that, but they're all trying to be immigrant. They're all trying to be safe. They're all trying to just survive this fucking world that it's just, it feels like everything's against you, you know? Yeah. And
I was just saying, you know, say what you were saying earlier, that they don't always have happy endings. That documentary I was talking about, the film crew like couldn't hack it. And so they stopped at a certain point, and then they ended up finding out that all the three people that were crossing, they found them dead later.
Oh,
so yeah, it was like such a depressing documentary, and it's something that always sticks with me in my head about how you know, or like, well, you know, that movie Everything is Beautiful, you know,
Life
is Beautiful.
The dad eats it, you know.
Yeah.
Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen a 20-year movie. But then the child gets to have that super happy ending. But at that point, it's like, this is totally a movie, because that ending didn't happen for like thousands, millions of people, you know?
Roberto Benigni.
Yeah.
97. Yep. Life is Beautiful.
Oh, 97? Jeez.
1997. Oh, my God. Dude, trust me. But things like that stick with you because it's not just wrapped up. You know, like me and my wife will watch something or we'll read something, and I go, that would have been amazing if they died. And it's so shitty because it's that impact. Like it hits, and it's gonna stick with you. And there's loss or something there. But I really dig the book, man. I think the art's awesome. I love the stories and how they're kind of stacked on top of each other. Like I said, that there's a thread there. And please go out and look for it. You said I made it very easy. $17.99. Very affordable.
Go look for it, and it's not hard to look for, man. This is like a bookie book. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can order it online at Walmart, you know. And it's the first book that I've had that's distributed and, like, advertised, and, like, it's available, like, everywhere, which is pretty cool. I checked it out at my local library and immediately checked it back in.
Aww, get them number. Heck yeah.
No, you should keep it so they can come up as a delinquent. Like, damn, they really love his book. You know,
I guess we gotta get another one.
I have like seven copies here, so I don't want to
just keep stockpiling them.
Just keep stacking them up.
No, it's definitely a great work that showcases not just good stories as a storyteller, but very much flexibility of style that you have artistically. Because like I said, I had to go double check, like, this was all Oscar? What? I thought it was like different artists at one point. It's amazing. It's amazing work. And you did very well.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm just going to keep gushing. Go ahead.
Ooh, I like gush. It's cool. No, but to talk a little, real quick, a little bit about the writing too. Aldama did a really bang up job on this stuff, and it was our relationship, our business relationship was super chill. This was not a comic book script at all. He wrote a collection of short stories and then up and decided to make it a graphic novel, and he gave all that task was all mine. Like, he sent me the short stories and said, you know,
buddy, a comic book.
You make this into a comic book, and I'm like, I can do anything, man. Like, it might take years, and I might quit a couple times, but but yeah,
but like, it's here. You did it.
Yeah,
no, but I have a couple of short stories that can shoot your way, Oscar. Because I know you can do it.
Get your coin though.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I can do that again, but
well, I can afford you maybe.
No, this was great as an experience. I'm doing another book. What do you call it? A contract worker, whatever. Like a writer, like this, like a writer approached me to do like a one shot comic book, and he sent me like a straight up comic book script detailing like everything he wants in it. I'm like, oh man, this is cool. Like,
yo,
you're like, oh shit,
yeah, you made it. Yeah.
Like I could awesome. Do that. I could do that too. But it was a really interesting thing to go through to get that this kind of a script and like turn it into, and this dude, he let me go nuts with this. But like, I gave my what I felt was his story through my art, and he looked at it, and for the most part, he was just like, "That's great." You know, like he had, I can't even think of a change he did, if there was any, probably some logistical stuff about things.
Panels or just how things look.
Yeah. But there was like almost nothing that I had to change on his end as artistically. He was like, you know, Oscar's artist, let him draw kind of thing, which was pretty cool. Yeah.
I mean, like, let you cook, right? That's what the younger says. Let him cook. But I definitely enjoyed the book. I love the artwork. I love the writing. You know, we'll have Aldama on here soon to talk about it too. You know, other works that he's up to. But moving this along. I want to talk about something big that happened during this past week. So, we had the passing of Akira Toriyama. So, those that don't know, creator of Dragon Ball and Dragon Quest. Am I wrong? I think Dragon Quest, the artwork for that as well. Yeah, Dragon Quest, because I love those games. And Chrono Trigger, he did art for that.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff. He inspired tons of stuff. But I think the conversation is just like, acknowledgement of how huge this was, of it reverberated through the Latino community, right? Because we always joke and make the thing, but like Latinos love fucking Dragon Ball, like they don't play. See, look, there's my Vegeta right here.
Hey,
got my dudes right here, just because. But like, if you don't know, if you're Latino, you know Dragon Ball. Like you literally just, it's around you. It's in the zeitgeist of it. But the fact that we saw things like in Argentina, I think everybody went and did a fucking spirit bomb, you know, for him and everything. And it was so cool. Like, I want to just open it up to you guys and what you guys feel about Toriyama, you know, being artists and just fans as well. I don't know if you are or aren't. Most of the time we are. But just kind of talk about that. Where do you guys feel or where your head's at?
Yeah, I'll play against stereotype. I was never a big Dragon Ball fan growing up, but
continue.
Yeah, but I was also not a hater by a long shot. All my friends were into Dragon Ball, so whenever I'd go to their house in high school, it'd be playing. My cousins were all into it, so it'd be playing. So I've seen my fair share without actually going out of my way to watch it, and I just had a ton of respect for that series and. You know, everything they've done. It was just so nuts how everybody just were so into it. And I felt it got to a point where I felt like it was too late. So I didn't even try to ever get into it. But one thing that I recently did buy some Dragon Ball mangas to get into, some of like the original old ones. I found it at Austin Books. Shout out to Austin Books in Austin, Texas.
Hey,
I got to get into those eventually. But It's no secret that everybody loved Dragon Ball, so the art, everybody's art is influenced in one way or another. Mine, I have some, you know, anime influences in my stuff as well, whether I, you know, whether it's conscious or subconscious, you know, and even though I was not a fan, I knew who Akira Toriyama was. So when I heard that guy died, you know, that was a big deal for sure.
No, for sure, for sure. So, breaking news. We have a new challenger has appeared. Dama appears.
I had a Pokemon music. I was in another multiverse somewhere.
But he's back, everybody. Well, welcome, Professor.
Thank you.
Well,
thank
you. Since you jumped in the middle of our Akira Toriyama conversation, we just talked about Through Fences, which we'll have you chime in here, of course. But since you just joined in, Professor, people that are watching and listening, give us a breakdown of who are you, what do you do, and what are you doing here?
Okay, yeah, what am I doing here?
Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
Interloper. Professor Latinx. My day name would be Frederick Luis Aldama. And I do comics, did Through Fences with Oscar. And it's like good times. We just did BIPOC Pop.
Yeah.
We did do BIPOC Pop. I was there. I had fun.
I was crying all 3 days at home.
I know.
When I was writing you that email, I was crying when I couldn't go. I was like, I can't believe I have to send this email.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, and Freddie was there and family and stuff. But it was a whole other level of awesome.
That's good. Yeah. I'm glad. Everyone looked like they had so much fun. And y'all, if y'all ever get a chance to hit up BIPOC Pop, do it. It's such a fun show.
It was fun. We got to chat and meet some of the creators. It was fun. I got
the
to
workshops.
Hang and
did workshop you have, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
And I did then, the one, I forget who was it. I did the one where it says turning your life into a story. Oh, like,
Chris Gonzalez.
Chris Gonzalez. Yeah. He had a scary brown man.
And you know, it was so, not only did we have like our creatives, industry folks, our scholars, young scholars, like a bunch of my students, you know, presenting on their work, but you know, we also, you know, I got, because I was so organized on this one and it's my third time with it, way ahead on the train on it, and we did really well. I got us on all the calendars for Austin. We got picked up over 400 newspapers across the nation. And I mention that because all of our creators, all of them, I think, sold out.
Good.
That's the goal.
So, yeah.
Get in front of people. Good. Get in their hands.
Yeah. So it was, for me, you know, it was a dream come true because it, you know, was everything that I wanted. You know, making, learning, like, you know, like you, Primo, like, you know, spaces that you might not step into, but that are just there. So you're like, I'm going to go workshop, my memoir. I don't know what this is, but I'm going to try it out. Over here, you got like all this cool comic stuff. You have like sci-fi books, and then you got panels and scholars, and it's just like, poof. So yeah.
No.
BIPOC Pop 2025. If you miss 2024, we'll be watching for you and the doors will be open.
Cool. Definitely. Well, I want to jump into Through Fences here in a sec, but we're talking about passing Akira Toriyama. So go Dragon Ball. Oscar so eloquently put out there that the impact that it had, even like he wasn't necessarily a fan of Dragon Ball, but Professor, I mean, obviously big deal. And I talked about it as in the Latino community, we love Dragon Ball, we love anime. Super Campeones is another one that I was a huge fan of growing up. What are your thoughts on the impact Toriyama had or just Dragon Ball in general for the Latino community?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us can point to this here in the room, but our community, our listeners, our people, the people that are watching, I mean, you know, one thing that I think people forget is that our culture is made in and through the kind of fusion of other influences and cultures. And anime, that's like, I mean, it's almost like walking into, you know, a panaderia, you know, the smells there where it just like immediately takes me back to my childhood. And it's the same thing with anime, with Dragon Ball, with manga, you know, part of my childhood. And, you know, I'd love to see more, and I don't know, you know, Elia and Oscar can talk to this, but I would love to see more of our Latinx comics creators kind of venturing into the manga, you know, as a part of their style and making it their own and, you know, doing some stuff. I know it's a big part of our childhood. Well, it certainly was a big part of my childhood, you know, and I'm older than you all, but like, and it continues to be, and it grew like massively, right? Anime was big for me as a kid. I think manga and anime became even bigger for you all, you know, as you were growing up.
Yeah. I mean, the story is being told. Why do you think Slice of Life is such a huge fucking hit in anime and manga? When why does there have to be a drug cartel involved in Latino stories? You know what I mean? Like, that's not the slice of everybody's life. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are themes that are uniquely Latino, Latine, that we can bring to that. Like you said, it's amalgamum, right? It's like this mosh pit of ideas and creative that we can all enjoy together, you know, muscle through and make it happen and party. So I love that idea. Cause I mean, what is it? There are, I think, was it Javier Hernandez? He did Manga Muerto. He did a manga version of his stuff.
That's
very
true,
campy, very fun. John Avina, you know, comic, he's working on manga as well. So there's people out there trying to make it happen in the community. So I hope that it does drive that, you know. Elia, what about you and Toriyama and anime and kind of just in general?
Yeah. No, when I, I don't remember where I was, but someone like sent the tweet to me, that girl, look what happened. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't really grow up watching Dragon Ball. I was on the Sailor Moon side of Toonami. but you knew who Goku was, you knew who Vegeta was. Mm-hmm. And like, I consumed Dragon Ball Z through, Dragon Ball Abridged. That was how I consumed it. But it's the core of like shonen was built off of Dragon Ball, and like all the shonen series that we watch, Naruto, One Piece, they were all following the steps of Akira, and it made it monumental. And the fact that it crossed the border and like, or not even like from America to to Mexico, it's the other way around. Mexico helped bring it to the States, and it's everywhere over there. It's everywhere in Mexico. You can see it represented. Yeah, like he's on taquerias and everything over there. Yeah. But no, anime has also been just something I latched onto growing up, and I hope, like, my Princess Otaku comic was very much manga inspired. I'm such an anime weeb nerd. That's my nerddom subject. I love anime. I love manga.
She's our shmi. Our anime shmi.
And so, just hearing this news, like, someone legendary who paved the way for all these other creators that have monumentalized manga and anime pass away, and young, I must say, is just like, so it's heartbreaking, but then you're like, there's a legend left behind, like a whole legacy left behind that will live on forever because we all consumed it in some way. We are consumed things that were inspired by the work, which just shows the power of a legacy. And he definitely left one behind.
Well said, Elia. But I think that it's great bringing it up because it is something that, you know, it's touched you in some way, even the second or third hand, right? And I'm really excited for the fact that we were able to share with that. This work is still out here for everybody to enjoy for generations, right? That's the goal, to make things so that they can make an impact. And speaking of impactful, let's double back a little bit. So we talked about Through Fences with Oscar. We really went through the process of his artwork and the story and how he was given, you know, a little bit of, well, not a little, but free range, right? On kind of how he wanted to attack it. But you wrote the stories, and we were talking about how none of these stories necessarily have a happy ending, right? Once reading this, expecting to have a turnaround, a turning point, a happy, you know, fix to this. But real life doesn't work that way. I mean, what went into writing the stories this way, or at least collection of stories this way?
Yeah, well, I knew Oscar was the right guy, you know, because of, you know, the wrestling part of his life, right? that, and of course, like, Oscar is just genius, you know, creative artist, you know, storyteller is just amazing. Yeah, I mean, some inspired by, you know, stories that I heard from, like, cousins. Some inspired by young high schoolers that I knew in one of my programs that I created to create pipelines for Latine, Latinx kids to go to college. I know that I didn't share this with Oscar at the time, but he knows now that, you know, El Celso is based on a story of a kid that I knew. And, you know, this is no joke. You know, this is, you know, we were talking about it the other day, but the most vulnerable, you know, gay, lesbian, LGBTQ women, children, end up being like seriously messed up in this space because of the way the politics have allowed this to become a place where people can get away with anything. The most horrific things happen and nobody's accountable. We saw it with the femicides that continue today. You know, they were like, oh, there's a serial killer. You're like, no, this is deep in the machista culture and no one's being held accountable because the whole like system is accountable and nobody wants to pull the system down. Yeah. You know, so yeah. So, you know, I mean, these are hard stories, but there are stories. There are stories of people, not only that we know, there are stories of family that we know well, and they're complicated. You know, Oscar and I were talking about, like, you know, Alberto and others in this story. I mean, not only like, those are people that are in our families. And, you know, the young cousin who's come over, who's, you know, undocumented, but who's given, you know, boots for Christmas because, you know, the contractor is exploiting him, but he's happy because he gets boots.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dad, we all know those dads, you know, so that's like, oh my God, you know, so we need to tell those stories. They need to be out there. We also, you know, we want to make room for joy, the stories with joy and stuff too. But, you know, when we're doing a Through Fences project, that's a Through Fences project, you know, and the thing is that, you know, we haven't been given very often. We haven't been given the luxury of the big story. When people are like, why short stories? And I'm like, well, first of all, they're braided. Like, there's a lot of, you know, Oscar puts stuff in the art that pulls the different weaves together, the different stories, right? Sure. But also, like, you know, until we are in a situation where all of our community, our families, our community are given the opportunities, the, say, if you will, privilege or luxury of the long stories, that's how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's, and we're talking earlier, and there's a thread that connects everything, right? And it's the truth. The things that we choose to either ignore, aren't reported on. You know, we've all heard of somebody, right? But no one's ever sat down and said, hey, man, look, this happens. This happened to me. And putting it in this way is consumable. Like we talked about it, I think I used the example of, like, me and Elia chatting, like, it's hard to get through some of these stories. You know, Elia even got really emotional reading one of them. And yeah. I said, yeah, you got to take your medicine. Here's a spoonful of this truth along with, you know, good art, consumable, and a way to telling the story. So what you guys did, it's fucking cool, man. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, I dig it. I really do. So I really applaud both of you for making this happen. It was a long process, you know, from what Oscar mentioned, and the fact that you guys held it together, I couldn't imagine anybody else doing it.
Yeah. It was well written. I think the illustrations really just helped the writing go hand in hand together. They both like worked with each other so well, and it felt like a book that was collaborated on perfectly to tell the best story in the best way. And yeah, I'm thinking about like how they were short stories, but if they were any long, I don't think they needed to be any longer at all. It were perfectly, you got what you needed to know, and you saw what you needed to see, and it made its point. And it like I talked about it earlier, the one that I had to put the book down for a little bit and said, so that one, as soon as I got to the last panel, I was like, I need a break. I was crying and I was like, I need a break. Mm-hmm. But that's also, but it not because I wasn't enjoying it, because it was very true and it was written and illustrated so well that I felt it. I felt it in my heart. And yeah. So
It's a great thing, and definitely check it out, Primos. You know, go look for it. Like Oscar said, it's available, easily available. Something you don't have to dig for. You literally look for it online, library, Amazon. Just Google it through fences. Definitely check it out. We're going to take a quick break and round out the show here. Primos, we are back. And of course, we have reached the point of the show where we bring up whatever we've been hyper-focused on, obsessing over for the week, so you can do it as well. But Primos, I want to start off with Miss Elia. Elia, what have you been into? What do you want to bring up? What do you want to highlight?
So I've been kind of like just watching. I did not get to watch the Oscars live because we didn't have the cable provider, but that's fine because all the protests and whatever, I felt okay. Sure. But I've been watching some of the performances after, because I love musical performances. I love seeing like the musicians perform, and I'm no joke been watching I'm Just Ken performance on loop. And
really?
If you have a chance to watch it, it's so much fun. This is the way I write men in comics. It's campy, it's silly, it's men being men. Ryan Gosling like killed. I will say Billy did deserve the Oscar for best song, but Ryan Gosling had the best performance at the Oscars in terms of music. I don't know. I've been really getting into like watching like kitschy campy stuff to kind of like get pumped for the next project I want to start working on after I'm done with Princesa Taco. And I'm Just Ken kind of hit the nail on the head of the style that I like love with guys being dudes in pink and just all of that. But that one was fun. I'm also, I did finish Avatar, the live action, and I talked about that earlier. That was my other indulgement outside of my work.
There you go. Oscar, how about you? What have you been into this week? What do you want to highlight for the Primos out there?
Let's see. So the trailer for the new Crow remake came out. And so that got me thinking. So this past week, I reread the Crow comic, which is pretty amazing. If nobody's ever read it, you really need to go get it. For people who don't know, it started off as a comic book. I rewatched first movie. It's amazing as always. Saw the second movie. Second movie.
That is amazing.
It's pretty good. It kind of poo-poos the ending, and it's kind of like, it's kind of almost a remake of the movie that came out 2 years before, which is silly. Saw the third one. It was forgettable, but it's fun if you're doing laundry. The fourth movie is terrible. Terrible. It's the one with David Boreanaz, Tara Reid, and
oh, okay.
Eddie Furlong. The movie is so bad. Now Dennis Hopper's in it too, as like a pimp. The movie it answers the question: what if Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez made one movie only, and it was so horrible that you never thought of them again? Like that's what The Crow 4 is.
Wow,
that's two names I would never think together.
It's trying to be like hip and cool, but it's really not.
It's gotta rain sometime, right, Oscar?
After that one, like it can only go up from that movie. So the second one doesn't have to try, the new one doesn't try to have to try too hard to follow up that. Reading Spider-Man Gang War, that one's pretty good. It's one of the big Marvel crossovers, and I don't think I'm gonna do crossovers anymore because like they're kind of like the side stories are very forgettable in this Spider-Man gang. Mm. Whereas the main Spider-Man Gang War story is super good. So yeah, that's me.
Okay. For me, I have been reading this book right here. Mr. Aldama, give me a copy. Signed.
Not that you're right in front of us, but it is really good.
Not that he's right there. It's really good. I want to talk about it a little bit because I know you joined us a little late. So I'm going to take this moment to kind of talk about this really quick with you. Tell us what this book is, what it's about, and why everybody needs to read it.
Yeah, thanks, Primo. For sure. This book... Okay, I'm just going to say right now, it's this weird kind of paradoxical moment, if you will. We're seeing a lot more Latinx, Latina fiction, YA, middle grade. But I don't know about you guys. I feel like I'm reading the same stories again and again and again. Like, I feel like and that's not our fault. I'm not saying that's our fault. It's that there are all these gatekeepers. So by the time anything gets published, it's already... picked up, you got to get an agent, agent has to sell it, but by the time you get that book out in the hands of people, it's starting to feel like the same story over and over again. Okay, so mine, The Absolutely Almost True Adventures of Max Rodriguez, is like the YA I like always wanted to read, and that just isn't out there. And I think Elia, you'll agree, and Primo Freddy, that like this is, it's not the whole thing about the language and the culture and the identity. That stuff happens. But I'm like, I'm like reading this again and again and like our YA stuff. Like Max is just insane. Like so cool. Max hangs with her two like super pals. Every Sunday they go to Mendoza's and they hang out by the spin rack and like talk about like, the latest X-Men comic that just dropped, and they like share their week and the craziness of their lives. And Max, who was born like with this tongue that was the thing under the tongue that was basically too tight that they couldn't speak, and it wasn't diagnosed till much later when they finally cut that little lip in there. Yeah. So Max was just like all about reading and like gorging on comics and stuff. And that helps Max as a 14-year-old navigate ninth grade. It's like Max's mama who's single and like, throws Max and her older brother in the truck and they go like do these like crazy like things up in the mountains in Shasta with, indigenous, like teepee rituals. And like the grandma grows mota in her attic to pay the bills. And like, this is just, go buy it.
I agree. I actually finished it today. I've been reading it a little over the past week between my breaks. And I think the first thing like that hit my mind as soon as like I finished it was like, I wish I had this when I was a teenager. It was so refreshing to have a story that reflected the culture, that reflected the misfits, but it wasn't like about that. You know, it was just the adventures of Max Rodriguez. And it was fun. Max is fun. Max is silly. Max is living life and experiencing it unapologetically. I was like, I want to do, if I had read that when I was a teenager, I may have been a little bit different now, but it was very enjoyable. I immediately, I was picturing everything, like, my artistic brain was like, I can storyboard it in my mind and like just see it happen. And I don't know, it was so enjoyable. I think everyone, even if you're not a teenager, it's a great read. Redeem your teenage years with this book. Yeah.
For me, and why I say I'm really into this right now, like, this is perfect. So let me slow down. The fact that she puts books in her pocket, I did that in high school. And this size, I hope you did it on purpose because it was this size, because that's how I carry this thing around all week. Put it in my back pocket. I'm definitely reading it as I go. Every single spot I put in my pocket, come back to it. Like, I'm glad you wrote, you literally made it this size for that. Because everything from the music she's into, her friends, it does ring to how I grew up or to someone that I knew. Right. And the parents aren't the stereotypical Latina mom or dad that you've seen. Right. Like that I relationship. And I don't want to strip it from whoever wants to read it, because you should read it. But it's not your atypical language, because how they're speaking is not what you typically get to read, is what you hear.
It's natural.
It's a natural conversation. The mixing of English and Spanish. My mom would have slapped me if I was speaking Spanglish like that. But when you read it, you're like, hey, this is what kids growing up are talking. I mean, Latino kids speak this way. That's what it is. And the story behind it, and Max herself, I really enjoy. I don't want to take away from it from anybody that needs to go read it. But you were right. You told me. You're like, hey, man, when you handed it to me, you're like, hey, Primo, it's going to blow your mind. And yeah, it did. It really did.
Can I read one line that really like hit me in the face in a good way?
Okay.
So this is the line that like I was like, this book. I'd rather know our skeletons than pretend they don't exist, than pretend to be normal like everyone else. Which is like, that's so true. Why would you want to pretend that nothing bad happened and just live that instead of acknowledge it and just be a better person? That's literally how Max was just like, okay, I did bad stuff, maybe, or people I've been surrounded by are, but they're not bad people, or we aren't bad people. We can grow. I don't know. That line just like, I was just like, wow, so right. But
glad. Oh my God. You guys are like the best, my ideal reader. Let me just say really quickly, I was, you know, I had a couple of really, you know, Oscar knows those high profile agents that I respect that do really good work, in the field to grow our field. And they told me, they were being honest with me. They're like, mom can't have porno, sexy magazines. She calls them sexy magazines.
Yeah.
Max can't have experience a phantom boner, you know. Blah, blah, blah. Take all that stuff out. Strip it out. Take this out, this out. And I'm like, well, then what do you have?
Yeah.
There's watered and, down, recycled.
Oh, yeah. God. But, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Much gatekeeping. And I'm like, sorry, ain't going to happen. I'm not going to do that.
I'm
and
glad that's you not... stood your ground. Because, yeah, phantom boner is very much part of the gender discovery experience. Sorry.
Amen. Yeah. There you go. Professor, what else did you want to bring up? I know you had something.
Okay, real quick. Yeah, and thank you again, all of you. So Labyrinth Born. Okay, this has been a crazy. I had three trains leave the platform in the same couple of weeks. This is my sci-fi novel, graphic novel, Labyrinth Born. I did this with Itzel, and it's out. I got a nice blurb from our friend Alex Rivera, Sleep Dealer. I think you can kind of see it anyway. And many other really beautiful blurbs, but anyway, it's this beautiful story about, basically how kind of older generations, anyone older than 25 suffers from this mysterious disease where our bone marrow literally kind of melts and our bones deteriorate and we're like gone. Like the planet is left in the hands of the young people, but it's not one of those Divergent Hunger Games things. It's actually an homage, a kind of this kind of celebration of arts and sciences and humanities and plays and literature and, you know, everything that brings us joy, and how the new generation can use that knowledge, innovate knowledge, and create something where we live in a kind of a sustainable planet now, and where our social tissue is repaired. So it's not your typical sci-fi, in that it in the end it celebrates and has lots of joy in it, and it celebrates everything that you and I and everybody we've all been talking about, the arts, you know, things that we have done, music, sculpture, painting, storytelling, you know, and then of course we have like everything that comes from that, like anime that we've been celebrating just now, and comics and so on. So yeah, that's what it is. It is extraordinary. The artwork in this is just like insane. Itzel is just, you know, just like, yeah, this is another one that just takes us, you can see the papa who's kind of suffering there. But yeah, this is a journey you will never forget. You will never forget this journey. Labyrinth Born, also available on Amazon and other booksellers.
Well, look at that. We have plenty to pick up. Like you said, man, you have Through Fences.
Y'all all have three books now to read, okay?
You have books to read. Read. And go watch the Crow trailer. Go read the Crow comic book as well. Then you'll get that reference, you know? You'll be part of the conversation. But I want to thank everybody, of course, for listening. And, of course, our guest, Professor Latinx, Professor Aldama, Oscar, of course, at 5 Meets. Before we go, I want to just give you guys a moment. Is there anything you want to, you know, promote? Anything, anybody, or for your socials, maybe, where they can find you? Oscar, go ahead.
Yeah, so I got a couple cool things happening. Let's see. You can find me at 5 Meets, number 5, at 5 Meets, on all social medias. March 30th, I'm going to be at the Austin Bouldering Project for Party World Wrestling. Chubby Hungwan and Puggenhead will be in action. It's going to be great.
Ooh, nice.
And the day after that, Easter Sunday, is when Mashbone and Grifty Volume 1 Open for Biz drops on Amazon.
Nice. Yay! Another must buy.
Yes, it's going to be great. If you've purchased our stuff before, you've purchased it in the small manga style, black and white book, but this one's going to be nice, big comic book style and full color.
Dope.
Heck yeah.
Exciting stuff. Professor, what about you? Is there anything else you'd like to bring up?
promote? No, we're good. jump on those trains. They're a great ride. Through Fences, the absolutely almost true adventures of Max Rodriguez and Labyrinth Born. I'm Professor Latinx on all social media.
Are you going to rest now, though? Are you going to
go have dinner?
Are y'all going to take a break?
No rest for the wicked.
I understand that.
Right. What about you, Elia? Anything coming up that we should discuss?
Man, I wish.
It's big.
I wish. I start streaming again tomorrow, Friday. I've been out 2 weeks due to medical drama, but I'm slowly getting back. My next focus is getting my damn comic book done. I want it done. So,
and hopefully. Texas Latino Comic Con was announced.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
In July.
I'm kind of in charge of that, huh? Yeah. Texas Latino Comic Con has been announced. July 20th, Dallas, Texas, Latino Cultural Center. Please be there. Artist applications are open. If you are an artist creator, apply. Do it. If you're scared, don't be. I'm in charge. I'm not that scary. I'm a little scary, but I love artists. So please do. We love showcasing independent works. We love showcasing independent creators. Anyone who represents the Latina culture beautifully, wonderfully, and would love to have fun with us. We're always looking to grow the show. So
there we go. Speaking of that, Primos, of course, know how you can grow this community. Share. Get this out there. Of course, we love that you guys chat with us at My Primos Podcast. Look us up on myprimospodcast.com. And I want to thank everybody here today, of course, for joining me. I really appreciate everybody out here. Let's let this community just push everybody up where we need to be. And of course, Primos, no matter where you're from, remember, we're all Primos. Okay, I don't
La vida es una corriente sin salir.